Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 12 of the Runner's World podcast. Each month we'll be bringing you the latest training advice, news and interviews from across the running world. I'm Rick Pearson, the Runner's World section editor, and I'm here with Ben Hobson, the digital editor. Ben, tell us what we've got coming up this month.
Wow, this month we've got Susie Chan coming in to talk to us about her journey from non-runner to ultra-running queen. We'll be talking marathon training with Tom Craggs from Running With Us, and RW's Kerry McCarthy will be offering some advice on how to plan the perfect running year.
Oh, Ben, what have you been up to this month?
I've started training for a 15-mile trail race at the end of March.
Oh, this is the Orion thing.
Orion 15.
Nice.
I didn't have anything planned this year, and I was looking at the interweb and was just, like, having a peruse, and... I'm quite local to Epping, and then we're moving house quite soon, and I'll be even closer to Epping. So this will be my local patch.
Lay down a marker.
Right?
Yeah.
Stake my claim.
Stake your claim, yeah, exactly.
By finishing in the bottom end of the field, probably. but yeah, it looks really fun.
Cool. 15 miles.
15
yeah.
miles of mud.
Never run 15 miles, so...
Yeah, I like the weird distance.
Yeah. Guaranteed PB.
Good point. Hadn't thought about that. Yeah. Good. Great. Training's easing off. What about you, Rick?
I've been in a weird distance as well because I just did the Country to Capital 45.
Okay.
So for those unfamiliar with that race, it's a 45-mile ultramarathon from Wendover in Buckinghamshire to Little Venice in West London. And it's half trail. So the first half is these great trails, partly on the Ridgeway, Britain's oldest road. And then the second half is a little bit less inspiring because it's on the Grand Union Canal.
Shopping trolleys and beer cans?
Yeah, a lot of fly tipping, actually.
Oh, it was
a shame, real shame. But, I mean, yeah, really well organised and a really good field, actually. I think the top 20, all very competitive runners, quite a few sort of national
Did
standard
Did you creep
runners.
In? Creep
no,
in the top 10?
No, I don't think we got into the top half, actually.
Oh, mate, I'm sorry.
But, yeah, it was good. I haven't done an ultra for ages, actually. But this year, 2019, is going to be the year of the ultra for me because... Done that one. Then we're going to do the escape from Great Britain.
Oh, yeah, you've signed me up for this, haven't you?
So this is us trying to escape from the centre of Great Britain in 48 hours.
Yeah.
And then the North Downs Way 100 in August. So it's going to be a year of long running for me.
But
yeah,
you've got an injury.
I have got an injury. I've got... I think it's referential pain, I think you call it in industry.
So you're not quite sure where it's coming from?
Well, like, it feels like I've got a hamstring strain, but I went to a chiropractor and he said, this is actually coming from your back. So I need to do lots of back stretching. I actually need to do not a lot of running. So the idea of doing...
Could do an ultra then.
Yeah.
Well done.
What you need, sir, is 45 miles of ultra running. Yeah, so I need to just take it easy. So I've been going to the gym and getting swole.
I didn't want to bring it up, but you're looking massive.
Yeah, I barely fit in this studio now.
It's ridiculous.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
So 6 years ago, at the age of 35, Susie Chan was a completely inactive smoker who could barely run for the bus. Today, she's a seasoned ultramarathoner and social media star with a seriously impressive running CV. So, Susie, welcome to the Runner's World podcast.
Hello. Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you on. So, as I mentioned in the intro, you came to running in your mid-30s. What was the kind of initial impetus for going out on a run? Why did you want to get into it?
I was in a bit of a life rut. I was a single mum. I was a bit miserable. I had a really hideous, dull job that I didn't like. And I just needed to do something for myself. And I didn't actually know what it was. And then my younger brother wanted to do a marathon. It was a sort of bucket list tick, you know, one off. Yeah. And as part of his training, he coerced me, I think is the appropriate word, into doing a local half marathon with him. And I thought, you know what, maybe this is what I need. Yeah. And so I signed up. I knew nothing about running. And I can remember my first run. I was trying to run around two football pitches without stopping. I didn't make it. anyway, to cut a sort of long story short, I did about, I don't know, maybe, I can't remember actually, it felt like forever, but I got up to, I think, about nine and a half miles, running up and down the road to Tesco's and back. Mm. I thought I was ready for this half marathon. And then on the actual day of the half marathon, I was very hungover. I didn't want to do it. And he came on the door, my house, banged on the door and dragged me out to the start of this half marathon. And I can remember standing there being petrified because everybody looks like they know what they're doing. Yeah. I found out it was something called a trail half marathon. Mm. I didn't even know what that meant. I was like, what's the trail? Why am I stood in this field? Where's the road? And I was stood there in my underwire bra and my gym shoes, because I didn't have proper training shoes, and with not much time. And then it started, and I started running up and down these like hills over stiles and through the woods, and thinking I was dying, actually. And I got about 9 miles in, which is actually as far as I'd gone in training. Yeah. And I just realised I was going to do it. I realised that actually I could keep running. Mm. And so I kept running, ditched my brother last 2 miles, because I just suddenly felt really good. And then when I crossed the line, it was an absolute feeling of euphoria, and I couldn't believe I'd run 13 miles. I just couldn't believe it. And it really was the start of it for me. I wanted that feeling again. And so I started running. I started doing 10Ks. And I think at some point I joined a running club, which was a real game changer for me, because I'm very lucky to have a very welcoming running club, very inclusive, very encouraging.
Yeah.
And then I did my first marathon, which, as we all know, everybody's first marathon is a tough thing to do. And then you say you're never going to do it ever again. And that's it. And then you sign up for another one the next day. And then I just kind of, it just snowballed, and it snowballed very quickly for me. Mm. So from that very first race to running sort of an ultra marathon was quite a swift journey. I kind of just went head first.
I read in a blog that you wrote a couple of weeks ago, you said that before you started running, you didn't have much confidence in yourself. And do you think that by running and by achieving these great distances, that you gained confidence and kind of a sense of like who you are?
Absolutely. It's really hard to try and talk about this without sounding cheesy, but it genuinely has changed my life. And if you told me as the lady I was in my 20s that I'd be doing this now, I would not believe you, because I can remember watching London Marathon, my 20s and early 30s, watching this on that sort of Sunday morning, thinking, what are these people doing? You know, but in awe, I'm thinking, oh, I'd love to run a marathon one day. But it is a really, really long way. And I never thought, I can remember chatting to somebody I worked with who had done it. And came in with his medal and sore legs, thinking, what is it? You know, I'm fascinated, but thinking it wasn't for me.
Yeah.
And it really has changed my life in many ways. And it's given me so much confidence. I had no self-confidence. I wasn't sort of very happy within myself. And I used to have a sort of crippling anxiety about speaking out loud.
Right.
And for some reason, I can talk about running in front of, I don't know, any number of people now without any problems at all. Because there's no sort of right or wrong, is there, really?
No, no.
And it's really, really changed me. And it's made, on a personal level, it's made me realise what is possible if you put your mind to it, which is quite... good for the soul.
Absolutely.
In terms of, as you say, putting your mind to a task, and the fact that we are in the start of a new year, what New Year's resolutions? Are you a maker of them? Do you think that people make mistakes when they set themselves up for these sorts of things?
Yeah, I used to do these actually, but they weren't really fitness ones. They were mainly sort of based around eating less cheese and things like that. You know, some sort of food based ones. And trying to sort of be a better person. Like, I'm going to definitely recycle more. So all my resolutions in the past have been framed around lifestyle, less about exercise. I think probably because it's always, I'm talking about myself in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years,
yeah.
It has always been something which I've continually done. So I don't personally set myself New Year's resolutions. And I know lots of people do. You know, obviously it's very busy at the gym now in January.
Yeah, yeah.
Parkrun's mobbed. It's great. I love it. I absolutely love it. But it is, I think sometimes people can set themselves up for not for failure, but just, you know, you can put a lot of pressure on yourself at this time of year. There's lots of, you know, I've had so many adverts for, you know, on social media for signing up for this and this sort of diet and to do these sorts of challenges. And I think it's much better to have a long-term view.
Yeah, that's what we were saying.
Yeah, I agree.
I think perhaps like a, not necessarily the whole year maybe. If you think by the end of January I want to have achieved this, think scalable.
Exactly, that's little goals, little steps. And I think sometimes people can, I mean, it's just a human thing and it's something I'm very guilty of, can kind of dwell on the things you've not managed to do.
Yeah.
So sometimes you're like, oh, it's raining, it's cold, I'm tired, I don't actually feel like going out, you know. And then and if you don't, then you kind of beat yourself up about it. You think, well, that's that New Year's resolution down the pan, and then you sort of don't bother, you know. But it's okay to miss a day. It's okay to be too tired for a day and just to not worry about it and just focus on the next day you can make it out and to make sure that you acknowledge those achievements. You know, so if you are starting running for the first time, you know, it's quite good to track how far you've gone. You know, whether it's, you know, you make it to like the second lamppost or third lamppost, and just acknowledge when you have gone that little bit further or that, you know, a little bit faster, whatever it is your goal is. And I think, you know, making sure that you do sort of applaud yourself for those and not be too hard on yourself at all for when you can't be bothered. Because let's be honest, there's not a single runner out there who has days where they cannot be bothered.
Yeah, 100%. I will hold my hand up to that. You're also very vocal online, Susan. I wondered, why did you want to promote your running on social media? What was it about that platform that appealed to you?
Do you know what? That was genuinely, people have asked me, well, you know, what you know, what has been your strategy? And it, literally making it up as I'm going along. It, honestly, the gospel truth. I joined, I think the first, so I was not into, I literally was not into social media at all. I didn't have a Facebook account back when everybody did. I genuinely joined it quite wide-eyed and innocent because I literally didn't know, like, what a trail run was, what trainers should I be wearing? You know, all of those questions which I see people asking, actually, especially this time of year, all those sort of newbie questions. Yeah. I knew nothing about running. Right. And I joined Twitter just to, I don't know, just to see what it was all about. And then swiftly from there, fell into the sort of the running community online. And then again, following on Instagram. And for me, when it started out, it was mainly a huge learning curve from other people. And it's a really supportive community. And I learned so much. And I asked some really dumb questions on reflection. You know, you just don't know. So it was so encouraging, I would say. And then it quite quickly got to the point where I was sort of just bumbling my way around up to ultra marathons, and I did a couple of really big races. I didn't know what I was doing, as per usual, and I was just chronicling it, really. And then people kind of got on board, and then as the races got longer and more challenging, it became more of a documentation of what it is I was doing. And and I'm always really, really happy to chat to people any level of any experience through social media about everything running, really.
Do you feel duty bound to it at all?
A little bit more now, if I'm honest, I think, because it's turned, it was kind of, I was feeding from it, you know. I was kind of learning about from everybody around me, and to a very large extent I still do. There's still people out there which are just, you know, I mean, there's always somebody running, isn't it, that's doing more extraordinary, absolutely, you know, fascinating, you know, faster, more fascinating, more interesting out there. And so in a way I am, but now there's a little bit of pressure, I would say. You know, you've got to, you know, I'm always running, I always am, but, you know, I will, you know, I'll be honest with you, I do deviate my run routes a little bit sometimes to get a more interesting backdrop for Instagram.
Right.
Which is great. It's taken me to interesting places.
You've discovered more picturesque areas.
Genuinely, right. I will go on a new trail route because I think there might be something nice to see there. And I have seen a lot of the world. Actually, I was talking about it on the way here. I ran to this podcast just because I used to run commute into to work to try and squeeze the running in around my working day. Yeah. And I, rather than sort of run directly to work from the railway station, I decided to run a different route in every single day. And so I drew this, I ended up with this sort of map of London where... Yeah. And then in the end, I'd be going down little streets, which I'd never even knew existed. Yeah. And it was a really, really good way to see, you know, to see somewhere.
We talked on the last podcast about, in the current issue of Run as well, there's someone who's written a piece about their favourite trail. And they were kind of saying goodbye to a town. And the goodbye that was actually hardest was actually to say goodbye to their most loved running route.
This is hitting a nerve.
So you're based in Farnham, right? So
yes.
Start of the North Downs Way.
Yes.
Would that be your favourite trail? Is there a trail that sticks out in your mind as one that's like, this is home?
Or... Oh, you know, you've really hit a nerve because I have literally just moved. I lived, it was a mile from the start of the North Downs Way.
Right.
And I have to be really honest with you, I have a love-hate with the North Downs Way.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I love it, it's home.
Mm.
But genuinely, I got to the point when I was doing some ultramarathon training where I was going up and down the North Downs Way so much that I was not sick of it. But, you know, it was just like a muddy puddle after muddy.
Very familiar.
Over familiar, really.
Right.
I mean, I literally got to the point where I knew sticks on the floor. but, you know, it's a beautiful trail. It is a beautiful trail. But I would say the favourite, and I'm actually not moving that far. I'm being very dramatic. I'm moving
next door.
6 miles up the road. But the place which I really, really do love running, and I was running there this weekend, and I can remember in my head thinking, you know, I've run a lot of amazing places in the world, and this place is beautiful. And it's a place called Frensham. Frensham Ponds, actually.
Oh, yeah, Frensham Ponds,
It's absolutely lovely. And actually, it's equidistant between my old house and my new house. So
okay, yeah.
I shall. So running there in particular is very beautiful. And all the trails that lead up to and around there are very beautiful. And if anybody ever comes running with me, so people do, you know, I meet people and I invite them down to Farnham in Surrey to go running. Frensham Ponds is always the destination.
Yeah.
It's very photogenic.
Swim
too.
Run. You get in swimming in Frensham Ponds.
Oh, God, you started on swimming now. You won't hear the end of
okay,
it.
Moving on, your question.
I kind of feel like we should do a quick fire round.
Please.
Right? Because Susie's done so many of these different races.
I like it, okay. Yeah.
And all these different stuff. So I feel like instead of pondering too quickly.
Oh, no.
Yeah?
Okay.
You can be like, demand immediately your favourite race. So
if I go,
favourite trail race.
Oh, I don't know. Trail race. I would say probably Pilgrims. So there's a few Pilgrims races. There's a half, which is my very, very first ever race. So I have fond memories of that race. And then there's actually an ultramarathon. And of course, it's on the North Downs Way.
Favourite marathon?
Boston.
No.
I mean, it's just, I'm sorry. I know London is lovely. I always feel bad. But Boston, it's something else. It's the oldest marathon in the world. It's, you have to earn your place there. And there's something absolutely unifying with your community, your run community, standing on the start line of Boston. Honestly, it's really, really exceptional race.
The medal you're most proud of?
Probably my first marathon, the Saab medal, because I thought it would be the end and it was just the beginning.
The best race you've run, your performance?
My best races actually tend to be by accident. I think... It depends on how you judge performance. If you're going by speed, then it's a very bog standard 10 miler called Lord's Hill, which I think I did it. I did in 1 hour and 8 minutes, which for me is quite
good.
Punchy.
Good going, yeah.
But I think probably my second ever 100 miler buckle, because I did it in at the time. It was textbook exactly right on paper. Emotionally, I had a breakdown at some point in the middle, but you wouldn't be able to tell by the time.
Mm. And the worst?
Oh, gosh, I mean, in what sense?
Like clawing at the floor.
Oh, yeah. So Jungle Ultra. Right. I know. The people who run this race, I always go, oh, I tell you, that one was tough. It was, I had underestimated it enormously. And it was the toughest thing. So it was 250 kilometres through the Amazon rainforest, sleeping in the rainforest. And I just got, I've got wet on day one, including my food and my sleeping bag. Mm. And I was just soggy. I don't like the jungle. I don't like bugs. I don't like elevation. I was just literally sliding around in the mud, getting bitten by ants for a week. It broke me, that race. And I actually, it was the only time ever in a race I was like, I'm done. I want to stop, and you know, I wanted to hand my number in to somebody because I just couldn't hack it anymore.
Yeah.
And I was in the jungle. Didn't. No, I didn't. I didn't, only because there was no one there.
Right.
There was literally no one there. The next time I was going to see another human being was at the finish line, so I had to keep going. It was that all lay down.
Maybe
dying.
They did that on purpose.
I think they do.
Right.
It was a toughie.
I want to ask you about your 24-hour track race.
Oh yeah.
Because I think of all the kind of sub-genres of ultra running, for me it's the most nuts.
Yeah.
The kind of round the track.
Mm.
Terrible weather, wasn't it?
Oh.
Tooting Beck track.
It's gorgeous. Gorgeous location.
Why on earth did you want to do it, and what was it like?
Do you know what? I just got a... So it was a 24-hour race, just to explain to people. It starts at midday and finishes at midday, and you basically run around a 400-metre track for 24 hours. And it's terribly exciting every 4 hours because you get to change direction. Yeah. So lots to look forward to there.
Clockwise.
Yeah, woo, anti-clockwise. Clockwise. And you get to see faces for one lap. Why did I want to do it? Because... I don't know. It's really hard to articulate. It's like a scratch I wanted to itch. If you're going to do ultra running, and somebody said to me, it is the purest form of ultra running because it's not about the beautiful scenery. Mm. Tooting Beck's lovely, but it's not about the beautiful scenery because, you know, one lap you've seen it. You've seen the scenery.
Yeah.
It's just about you moving, you know, moving and running along and your head, basically. It's a test of mental stamina. And for me, that's that in particular I find interesting. And that's why I wanted to do it. And it rained for 23 of the 24 hours. And I think soul destroying at points, but blissful in others. It was an absolutely extraordinary race.
Did you find it sort of transcendent?
A little. Kind of went completely numb with everything and very focused. And I had the only words I can describe the last 40 minutes are euphoric.
Hmm.
Wow. I mean, I was in a world of pain, but I was absolutely euphoric. I had a couple of... I was just wanted to stop. I was so cold. Everything had got wet. I hadn't bought enough kit, and everything had soaked through. And then I was running around. I had a particular goal in mind, which I was didn't look like I was going to reach it. And then somebody was watching me running very slowly around this track, and they literally gave me their clothes. So literally got undressed and said, "You look so cold." And they gave me their clothes and I put them on. And then that was a catalyst to me running fast. And then I started, I did some maths and I worked. I was running for a place. I was running for a sort of podium place. And I put the hammer down. And then as I was running faster and faster, people started really cheering. And it just kind of snowballed into an absolutely fantastic last 800 metres.
Amazing. I want to do it now.
Really. Honestly.
I definitely do not want to do it.
Rick, I'll crew you. It's astonishing. It's very surreal and very pure.
Mm.
Very pure.
As I have you here, I'm gonna take some advice, try and get some advice, because this man next to me has signed me up to do this escape. What's it called?
Escape from Great Britain.
What is that?
We have 48 hours to get as far away from
the centre of Great Britain as
like
possible.
A jailbreak kind of
exactly.
race.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah.
So.
You have to run, obviously.
48 hours.
Yeah, as much as you can,
That's vague.
Yeah. So if you do 100 miles in the 48 hours, you can get to Glasgow.
Yeah. Is that in a straight line, though?
As the crow flies.
Yeah.
So, I would suggest...
As a man who's never done anything of this ilk, in terms of how do I approach this? What do I do? Do I just...
So are you aiming for 100 miles? Is that your...
I don't know, Rick. What are we doing?
Well, I think it would be...
You've got to, really.
It would be a good... It would
2 days?
Be a marker, yeah. It could be done.
2 days, 50 maybe. Miles.
100. Oh, okay, yeah. That's fine.
Great.
Yeah, okay. So what you want to do is I would 100%... it's going to be about logistics.
Right.
So you need your logistics on point for that. So
Rick.
For that, you're going to need to... Rick's good at logistics,
isn't he?
He loves,
the map.
He loves maps. So that's that sorted.
Great.
The next thing, really, is your nutrition. So the two things I'd say in ultramarathons... I mean, fitness is obviously there, but I would say it's about a third. The other two things are your head and your nutrition. You've got to get those two things kind of right. You've got to keep fueled up.
Mm.
Otherwise, you're going to start feeling really tired.
Okay. I can eat.
There you go. As long as you can eat.
Very good at
that. Are you?
Yeah.
Okay, but when you're running?
Fine.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, we need to practice that.
I am the official Runner's World beer mile champion.
Oh, sorted.
Consuming
on the fly is absolutely not.
There you go. Then that's fine. You literally just swear your head then, really. Look, that's it. I'll put my money on you.
Great.
No problem.
Signed up.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. It'll be good.
Yeah, Susie, what have you got coming up in 2019?
So I'm off to Costa Rica in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But I've got a couple of foot issues from the track, so I'm not sure how far I'll be running. It's called Costa Rica Coastal Challenge. I've done it before.
Nice.
So I'll go back, and because I'm signed up and I'm there, I'm just going to give it a go. I might not get as far as I'd like to. So that might be more of a sort of recce fun holiday with some running than taking part in the race. I've got Badwater Cape Fear coming up, and then one called a really interesting race, which I'm really interesting. It's called Badwater Salton Sea.
Okay.
And so that is part, obviously, the Badwater race. And you have to run in teams. And it's two or three. And you have to run together. You're not allowed further than 20 metres apart.
Right.
And it's 81 miles through the desert and over a mountain.
Who are you roping?
So I've got my friend Katrin. She's really fast. She's just gone sub-3 for a marathon. So I'm a bit worried. She's gonna she's punchy. Yeah, I met her on a sand dune in the marathon de Saab. So so she's gonna be my wing woman, probably much faster than me. I'm currently on the lookout for a third member. I did have somebody, but 40, she can't make it. So.
Ben's well up for it.
Oh yeah. Well, after this escape from Great Britain thing, I feel like this is my
seasoned.
Future.
Seasoned.
Rick will do it. He's doing the North Downs 100.
You're doing North Downs 100?
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
Why North Downs 100?
Well, I love North Downs Way as well. It's always been. I've always had to get a sort of train out to do it. I know it's the hardest one of the Centurions.
Probably. Be the last one I'll do out the four, I'd say, because it's so tough.
I just feel like if I was ever going to do it, I want to do it on a route that I love, and I think that will help. That will help. All right, whatever.
You only get really tired at 100 miles. You literally don't care where you are. You don't care where you are.
But I love this path. No. Who cares? Looking forward to that.
If you want to do any recces, I know the first.
Yeah.
I literally know the first 60 miles of the North Downs. Hand.
Yeah. I'm quite good until Caterham.
Okay.
And then I'm in a. Then I'm.
Oh yeah. No, that's as far as I know.
Oh okay.
Okay. Fine. So can't help you.
I think finally. As you have just managed to convince your 70-year-old father to run his first park run.
I can't believe this.
Which is great.
I can't believe it, yeah.
Is there one message you'd like to get there, out there, about running? And what is it?
Do you know what? I think, one message, it's going to be a long, garbled one. Anybody can run, and I know it sounds ridiculous. I've just been talking about some of the things I've been doing, which probably sound a little bit absurd, but genuinely, I'd never run before the age of 35. My father is 70. He's just done his very first park run, and it's really is something for everybody. Anybody can run if they really, really want to. It is just one foot in front of the other. And it's, you know, if you want to stop and walk, that's absolutely fine. Absolutely applauded in ultramarathons. It's all just about getting up on your feet and putting one foot in front of the other at whatever speed that is.
Perfect. Great. Susie, thanks so much for coming on the Run of Floor podcast. It was absolutely great to have you on.
Thank you for having me.
Brill. All right. Fab.
See you in the North Downs.
Yeah.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
So, it's happening. We're going to start talking about the marathon.
Yep, sounds good, yeah.
All right, good. And I think the big bit of news is that it's going to be Elliot versus Mo. In terms of a punchy headline, it's Elliot versus Mo at London Marathon.
Yeah, it is exciting though, isn't it? I guess because Farah has won a major marathon now. So he is a genuine contender. Whether he's really going to be duking it out with Elliot stride for stride in the final part of the marathon? I don't think you'd find that many people who think that it is going to be super close.
But
yeah,
Mo's got the backing of a true running legend.
Tell us more.
Ron Hill believes that Mo Farah will eventually, at some point, run sub-2.
It's a massive, massive claim, that, actually.
Right. He came through in a press release. Yeah, he says he's got what it takes to do it. Just good luck to him. It's inevitable that the barrier will get broken eventually. They are so close, it's going to happen.
Well, I think we both agree that at some point the two-hour marathon is going to go. I wouldn't have said Mo, for all his amazing attributes, is the front runner to break that barrier.
No, but I agree. But I'd also say that if you look at Mo's road career, what's like 15 months? 18 months?
Yeah.
Before like the big switch.
Yeah.
Dabbled. But, like, now, focus. I mean, if you think Elliot's been running marathons professionally for however long and you think experience and time and Mo's getting faster and things like that. Yeah, maybe it's like a race against the clock in terms of like age and performance and bits and pieces. But
yeah, that's true.
You never know.
That's true. And Mo's been making... I like what he's had to say about the kind of prospect of racing Elliot in London, because I think he accepts that he's not going to be the favourite against what many people think is the greatest marathon runner of all time, world record holder, etc. But he says he's not scared of racing Kipchoge, particularly in London. He thinks he'd have the advantage of the crowd, which of course he would.
Yeah, definitely.
So if he's ever going to do it, if he's ever going to beat Kipchoge, you'd think that London would be the place where it would happen.
Yeah, for sure. Do you think this year, though?
I don't, actually. I think Kipchoge just operates on a slightly different plane to others.
Everyone.
Yeah, I think it's a bit like kind of Kylian Jornet when he turns up, and unless there's a, like, you know, an injury or something.
It doesn't matter. He dislocated his shoulder and he still won.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I just think that if Kipchoge turns up fit and uninjured, he is pretty much unbeatable at the marathon. But I do think Mo will be in the top three and maybe we'll run him close in second. Yeah. And that would be a fine achievement. I wonder what our listeners think. Do you think that Mo's got a genuine chance at beating Kipchoge in London at 2019, or is Kipchoge just a little bit too good? podcast@runnersworld.co.uk.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Lots of our listeners are undoubtedly training for a spring marathon, so who better to provide some training advice than Tom Craggs? Tom is one of the UK's most in-demand running coaches and has also run a 2:45 marathon himself, so he should know how to do it. Tom, welcome to the Runner's World podcast.
Hi, guys. Really, really good to be with you.
A lot of people are kind of getting stuck into the early stages of marathon training. Maybe they've got a place in London. What are some of the key things to get right at this stage of training?
Look, I think the first thing to do in these early stages is to really reflect upon your own running and where it's at before you decide, well, how am I going to attack this kind of journey that I've got over the next few weeks? Because look, we're all different. Now, there will be people listening to this who are perhaps literally just pulling on their running shoes for the first time over the last few weeks. And for them, their marathon journey is going to look very different to perhaps a runner who runs regularly, or perhaps even a club runner who is already used to that kind of rhythm and structure in their training. So look at you and your own running. And I guess when, as coaches, when we construct a training plan, we're trying to do two things. We're trying to look at the demands of the event that you're training for. So in this case, you know, 26.2 miles for a lot of them on the road. And then the training plan is the meeting place between those demands and then your individual kind of strengths and areas for development. So we need a bit of time to spend looking at both. Now, the demands of the marathon, there's, you know, plenty written on that. So we don't need to kind of go through that heavily. What we need to look at is kind of, where am I at? What's sensible and feasible for me for these first 6 weeks of training? Now, if you're just starting out, that first 6 weeks of training, a lot of that is just going to be about building, I hesitate to say base because it's kind of a cliched word, doesn't really mean much. We're trying to build up some foundations, and those foundations are really getting the frequency of your running right that is balanced with the rest of your life to ensure you can recover. And then gradual increases in the volume of your training, and in particular the volume of some of your longer running, to ensure that we're then in a place by the time we get to March to hit some of the more marathon-specific stuff. If you're a bit more experienced, then it's a similar process of looking at yourself and looking at the demands of the event, but it might be looking, kind of having a bit of a review about how things went last year. If you're the sort of person that would benefit from a block of training now, focus more on developing the speed of your running or the power within your running, then now's the time to do that. Because for all of the guys listening to this, where your early March and through to the end of April need to be focused is on really marathon specific training. So now is the chance to work on some of the components that maybe we won't get a chance to do later down the line.
What advice would you have for anyone who's possibly sort of started off training now and they might think that they're sort of picked up a little niggle on, you know, how do you, at this early stage, would you cope with something like that?
I mean, I think the biggest driver behind making sometimes some poor choices around your marathon training is perhaps fear of the distance and fear of the marathon. Now, I'd say the first thing to get over is that fear. Yeah, we need to respect the marathon. It's a tough event. But fearing it leads to us to making some pretty poor choices. And one of those poor choices can be if I've picked up a niggle, or even if I kind of know there's something sitting there, I've had this tightness, it's been sat there for a number of weeks, but actually that 26.2 miles, I've got in my training plan that I'm going to progress by X amount each week, or I'm all ready to go and do 15, 16, 17 miles for a long run, or whatever it is that you set for yourself. The fear of the distance and feeling absolutely beholden to a training plan is the most frequent way I see people get injured, because they aren't prepared to adapt and aren't prepared to be flexible. Now, the way that we work with elite athletes.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
It says we won't prescribe training over the course of 16 to 20 weeks. We will have a sense of direction, and we might have an idea about what the key elements are going to be, but on a kind of week-by-week basis, we're prepared to adapt and we're prepared to kind of work with the body as it feels in that time. So if you've got a niggle, you've got loads of time before the marathon. It's time to step back. It might be that you need a bit of rest. You might need to see a physio. It might be that you can cross-train. So it might be you can jump in a pool or jump on a bike or an elliptical, still get some great training in, but not make that injury worse. Because if we drag that injury out to March, then we are going to find that problems are going to start to occur, both physically and confidence-wise.
I want to ask you about the long run, Tom, because it seems like there's lots of different marathon training programmes that prescribe a different length of long run. I think in the UK, we're quite obsessed with this kind of 20-mile long run. And then in Europe, it seems to be slightly less. And you've got the Hansen's method, which is sort of 16-mile long run. What are your thoughts on this? And do you think it just depends on the athlete?
I'm going to be sort of an annoying running coach. And of course, I write training plans for groups of people and I don't necessarily know the individuals. And I've done that actually with Runner's World this time. Of course, when you're writing a training plan that is going to be followed by a lot of people, you're trying to make the best judgment you can about where somebody might be at that given time. When we do that on the basis that the athlete is basically coaching themselves and they're prepared to adapt and manipulate that training plan to work for them. Because the honest truth is that the only right answer for what your key long run should look like is what I said before, is the balance between your individual physiology and psychology and the demands of the event that you're training for, in this case, the marathon. But whether that marathon's London or whether it's Brighton or whether it's a trail marathon that has different components to it, they all need to be reflected in there. Now, I guess I'm not keen on rules and I'm not keen on systems particularly and applying generic systems to individual people. But I guess there are a few things from a rule perspective that is reasonably common sense. If you go into your marathon, or I would rather have you going into a marathon 10%, 15%, even 20% undertrained than 1% overtrained every time. And I think it goes back to, again, the psychology side. The fear of the marathon means that people want to prove to themselves they are already fit enough to complete the marathon, already fit enough to run the time that they want to run beforehand. And you won't be ready. You should not be physiologically or psychologically ready to run a marathon until marathon day itself. And the problem is, by kind of prodding away at that key long run and making and putting so much emphasis on that, and perhaps for some people dragging it out too fast or too long just to prove to yourself you're ready, that can actually be the thing that then scuppers you on race day. So for me, for most people, a longest long run of 3 hours to 3 hours 15 is absolutely plenty enough. And the scary thing for some people is, if you're perhaps not quite as quick and you're looking to run a marathon in a slower time or just get round, you might not get to 20 miles in your training. And that takes a lot of trust and a lot of confidence that is okay. But then it comes back again to thinking, what am I doing here? I am not trying to prove to myself in advance I'm ready. I'm trying to just improve my fitness. And my readiness will also be measured by how energized and recovered I am on race day.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. Yeah,
absolutely. I think that, again, Rick mentioned some sort of fairly old school approaches, and I think that a newer idea that perhaps elites have probably been doing for years, but the recreational runner didn't really is the importance of strength and conditioning in a training regime. And how much do you think, or how much would you tell someone to incorporate that into their training regime?
I think it's critical, really. I mean, if you stand at sort of mile 21, 22 in a marathon, where you will notice the difference between people who are running well and those people who are struggling, you're not hearing their breathing rates. You're not seeing their heart and lungs work. You're not looking for that. What is obvious, where it becomes obvious, is in somebody's posture and in somebody's, how efficiently their body's moving, and that, what their leg speed and their leg turnover looks like, and all of those things. And those things are fundamentally affected by your strength and conditioning. So for me, it's critical. And I think, regardless of whether you've had got an injury history or not, regardless of whether you're very strong in a gym or not, keeping a regular bit of strength and conditioning in there a couple of times a week. And for some people, that might be something as really simple as a basic core routine or a Pilates class or something that kind of keeps you focused on your body posture and your core conditioning. For some people, it might involve some more specific conditioning, and that could be because you've got an injury that keeps occurring in the same area, so a physio's advised some specific exercises to work on. Or it might be that actually, you know, you're the sort of person who wants to develop a bit more overall strength or power, and therefore you might get in a gym and do some squats or deadlifts or some more running specific work. So but I'd say it's crucial for everybody. What I'm saying is, you don't necessarily have to go and beast yourself in the gym in order to see success in your condition.
Rick is currently beasting himself in the gym, aren't you, Rick?
I think
Rick has a way of making every other male feel very insecure. He's ripped, and we all know it. So, I think the other aspect of the conditioning, and I think this is one which is often not talked about, but is really important, is the marathons can be, you can get very stuck into just going out and pulling on your running shoes and going out the door and thinking it's only about your heart and lungs. And it can, to be honest, for some people, a lot of us absolutely love running, and I would choose to run twice a day, every day of my life if I could, if my body would hold up to it. But the truth is, a lot of people can find running sometimes, believe it or not, a little bit boring, and having a bit of stimulus in there.
Update.
And something that's a bit different. I know it's shocking thing to say, isn't it? But something having a bit different in there, you know, something that's psychologically, because ultimately there will be a 5 hour, 6 hour plus marathon runner out there that is better, stronger, and more capable in the gym than I am, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think having those aspects that kind of help you build confidence and show that you are, you're progressing, not just your heart and lungs, but your whole body. And there are aspects of your training that add stimulus and interest in there for you. That's really important. And that's as important as what's going on physically.
We got the chance to ask some questions to Mo Farah last year. And one of the things that came out of that was that he's running, say, 130 miles a week, but actually only one of those runs was on pavement, and the rest were on a variety of different surfaces. And I think a lot of elites seem to
be able to do that. It's harder for amateurs. But would you recommend people running on softer surfaces for the marathon if they can?
I absolutely would. I mean, there needs to be a combination of both, because obviously, you know, ultimately the marathon for most people is going to be run on the roads, obviously. So your body needs to get used to that impact, because when you run on the roads, there is a different kind of plyometric response. So your tendons are doing something a little bit different. And in fact, sometimes running on roads and running on firm surfaces is actually very good for your kind of neuromuscular system. It's really good for getting your legs feeling poppy and moving quickly. So I wouldn't necessarily rule out running on the roads. But I would recommend, and I'd say most people don't achieve this for practical reasons. But if you could, I'd have runners run at least 60 to 70% of their running off road. I know there'll be people listening to this to think that is just not practically possible for me because of where I live, or, you know, I can't get to a park and a trail, and that's real life, you know, and those practicalities are that can't be helped. Obviously, still get out on train, but for those that can, it's really good in a number of areas. Obviously, it reduces the impact. A direct impact of actually hitting the ground. It can build additional strength because there's little muscles around your ankles and those kind of muscles that provide stability. We make progressions there. It means your foot's not moving in exactly the same way each time it hits the ground as it will do on tarmac. It's good for the mental side of your training because it often means you're running in nicer environments to keep you more relaxed, not running around cars, you're not breathing in fumes. But it's also because it takes you away, or it should take you away from just having a pure focus on splits and paces. Because when you get off road, a lot of those don't really mean anything quite the same way. So you're not staring down at your wrist the whole time going, oh God, I should be running this. I coach a lad who a lot of listeners will know called Robbie Britton, who ran sub 2:30 for the marathon in Valencia. And Robbie lives in Chamonix. So the majority of his training is done off-road, but not only is it done off-road, it's done off-road up and down sort of mountain trails. And his paces are, you know, a lot of his runs, he will come back averaging 10 to 11 minute miles. And this is a guy trying to run sort of 5:30, 5:40 miling for the marathon. And having that kind of just taking your brain off always judging yourself on the pace of each run is really good as well. So it has loads of benefits. And I'd strongly recommend it if you can.
Yeah. Well, we've been finding the grassy edges in the park, haven't we?
Yeah.
We took this on board, and we've been straying into the off the path whenever we go around Hyde Park.
Isn't it funny? You can run in Hyde Park, you can run in Victoria Park, you can go to Richmond Park, and they're these beautiful trails, and they're easy to run on. Like they're quite firm, hard packed trails, and yet people are still running around on the tarmac.
100%.
I think a lot of people think I don't have the option. A lot of times you do. You just kind of need to be creative about it.
A couple of feet to the right.
Exactly.
Actually, look, I've got my long run, and I can't do it all off-road, but I could run to the park and spend, you know, a third of my run running off-road and the other two-thirds on-road. Well, that's better than not doing any, for sure.
Yeah. I'll ask you, Tom, my brother-in-law is doing the London Marathon. I think he's quite a good sort of case study, because he hasn't done a marathon before and he hasn't really got a clue as to what time he'll run. So he kind of picked a number slightly out of the air, like a lot of people says, you know, I want to run sub-4. But his potential is a bit of a mystery, I think, to him. So actually, as he goes through his training, or as someone like that went through the training, what are some of the indications that you may have got it, you know, your target might be either overly ambitious or overly cautious? And what do you do?
It's always a really interesting question. It's one I get asked a lot. Obviously, if you charity runners in particular, or those people starting out and doing their first marathon, they may only do one, for example. How do you determine? And obviously, it's a key skill to have on race day is to know how fast you're going to go off. So we need to get a sense of that. The truth is, though, a lot of the reason why people pick target times is because setting yourself a target is really key for the psychological side of your training. So if you set yourself a goal, even if you think it's overly ambitious, it's something that's going to kind of drive you forwards. The main problem that I see is that actually most people set themselves goals that are actually probably not ambitious enough.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And I think a lot of people underestimate what they're capable of and underestimate what you can achieve in 10, 12, 14, 16 weeks worth of training. So again, the annoying coaching answer to your question is that your training pace should emerge as a result of the process of doing your training, as opposed to directing your training,
yeah,
if that makes
yeah.
sense.
Completely.
Because otherwise, how do you know? I mean, sure, if you run marathons before and you've done and you're more advanced and you're going to go and do physiological testing, and we've got this range of data that we can rely upon to kind of make informed judgments about the pace. That's different. But for most people, they're not going to have that. They're not going to have access to that kind of sports science. And even going through rough calculations, and the one you'll hear a lot is, go and run yourself a half marathon. Go and run it hard. You know, take your half marathon time, double it, and add 10 to 20 minutes. Well, okay, so that's a broad rule of thumb. It's not massively accurate, but it's a broad rule of thumb. But, of course, what that relies upon is that you ran the half marathon at a genuine pace, you know, and that you ran a half marathon as well as you probably could. And that's not an easy skill even for somebody yeah. who's super experienced. So I think my sense is the answer in terms of what it feels like to run a marathon is very dependent upon how fast you're going to run it. So you get a broad idea. If you're going to run sub 3 hours for the marathon, which some people do in the first marathons, not really knowing what they're going to do. In fact, that's basically what I did. I actually was a minute outside 3 hours. And the issue was not that I didn't have a conception of pace. The issue was that I didn't have a conception of the effort that I was supposed to be putting in. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're going to be running 3 hours, you know, that's not actually easy. It doesn't feel easy. It might feel easy for the first half, but the second half, you're certainly going to be breathing and you're going to be working. Yeah. You're going to be working a bit. And you're actually going to be working probably a slightly higher percentage of your maximum heart rate than somebody would be running 5 hours, you know, because they're out for longer. You can't work at the same intensity if you're going out for a bit longer. Yeah. So if you're running 5 hours, 4.5, 5 hours, 6 hours, your running needs to feel conversational pace. And the process of training, your marathon effort is conversational pace running. And actually, does it really matter whether it's kind of 45 pace or 5:15 pace in the early weeks? No. And you just have to trust that as you move through your training, you will start to get a real sense of your rate of perceived exertion. You really will get a sense of, okay, so this is the difference between me running fully conversational pace and this is when I'm kind of running a steady pace.
Yeah.
And the reality is, if I do too much of that steady running too early in a marathon, it's going to hurt me. So getting a sense of the perceived exertion is a real skill, and it's one that kind of emerges for your training. And I know that's not necessarily helpful because people want to kind of know, there's this definite test that will tell me what my marathon pace will be, and the truth is there isn't. It is a process of heart rate monitors and stuff like that can help. For most people, they're going to be somewhere between kind of 65% and 80% of the maximum heart rate within a marathon, but you know, really, because the psychology of your running kind of governs and plays a role in your own sense of perceived exertion. You do need to kind of let this emerge. And when you get to the key weeks of training, if you're doing stuff like, okay, my key long run might be, say, 3 hours, I'm going to run the first couple of hours easy, and then I'm going to try and push the pace on for the last hour. If you're able to do that, you will get a broad sense in that last hour of what kind of paces you can push on to. And I think that would give you a reasonable idea. Yeah. It might not give you a pace per mile exactly, but I wouldn't recommend pacing a marathon like that anyway.
I think the one final big debate that we need to have here is that we've been talking about the recently announced news that Eliud Kipchoge is running London, so it will be Mo versus Eliud.
Yeah.
Who's your money on?
This is difficult, isn't it? Because as a coach, as a British coach, you're going to kind of say patriotic kind of, you know, fervour behind your run. Look, I think I've been surprised about how well Mo ran his last marathon. And that, you know, Mo is a fabulous athlete, a really fabulous athlete. But the reason why I say that is because probably there's been very few athletes, if any, that have had the range that Mo has had, from kind of 1,500 metres right up to the marathon. And I was surprised about how quickly he ran his last marathon. And the truth is, If Mo is there, I mean, if you're Elliot and Mo is there with you with 5K to go, you're going to start to get worried, aren't you? I mean, because we know his ability to inject pace. His whole career has been based upon his ability to close races like nobody else. I've been fortunate to briefly meet both, and they're both, you can't get to that level without having incredible mental focus and discipline in your training. Elliot, though, and a lot of people will say this, but Elliot, there's something about him and something about his psychology and the kind of serenity in which he approaches the marathon that is, for me, makes him probably the most impressive male distance athlete I've ever come across, and particularly at the marathon. Because a marathon is such a psychological kind of process, or a psychobiological process. So it kind of that combination between your mind and your physical self. Because I hate sitting on the fence. If I had to put money on it now, I'd put money on Elliot. There we go.
And I'm totally
will shout for Mo all day long.
I think we all will. I think we'll hope that the buoyancy of the crowd will push him on. Tom, thank you so much for joining us. That was incredible. I feel already inspired to sign up to things, but without a set time in mind. Right?
Let your training govern that.
Trust the process. Perfect.
Absolutely.
Tom, thank you so much indeed.
Cheers.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
So, as some listeners may know, last year, Runner's World organised a relay event to the highest point in each of the London boroughs. We completed the 150-mile route in 22 hours, 35 minutes and 36 seconds. And this year, we're attempting to run the M25.
Oh.
Not the actual M25, then. That would be very dangerous. But the London Loop, which is called the M25 for walkers. And despite that name, it's actually a very scenic route.
Yeah.
We've got an amazing team lined up. So we've got the likes of Richard Asquith, author of Feet in the Clouds, Paul St. and Hewitt, the founder of Parkrunners, joining us. And
fantastic.
I think it's all in the kind of spirit of trying to have an adventure right where you are, rather than feeling like you have to go, you know, to far-flung places to have that kind of time.
Also, the key fact to this adventure is that you didn't have to draw the maps.
Exactly.
Like last time.
Yeah, Transport for London have got the maps, so that's saved me, honestly, about a month of my life.
Right, good. So there you go. Easy adventure for everyone to do. This one is easily replicated.
It's a signposted route, officially. But having wreckaged some of it, I tell you what, some of these signposts, Ben.
Non-existent?
They've been turned the wrong way.
Fantastic.
They're non-existent.
I mean, that sounds like juvenile jinx, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I jinx.
Yeah. So it's... It may be very hard to complete it within 24 hours, which is, of course, the aim.
Right. So the last one was broken in from point to point, as in, like, from the highest point to highest point. So some people ran sections that were 9 miles, some people ran sections that were half a mile.
Yeah.
How are you breaking it down this time?
Trying to break it down in as close to sort of 10-mile segments as possible. So there are various maps that do various length segments, but the idea is that people run in twos or threes or fours, and run about 10 miles, and then hand over the baton, which would probably be an iPhone.
The old GPS phone.
GPS phone.
Great. Generic phone.
Yeah, and the idea is that people will be able to follow it on Strava, so you can follow our progress, or lack of progress, if you like. Very interested to know if people are doing their own kind of DIY adventures, because there are loads out there, and we've had a few letters in, but if any listeners are planning any similar types of runs, they should let us know.
Definitely.
Yeah. podcast@runnersworld.co.uk.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Planning a running year is a bit like running a marathon. You have to set off at the right pace or you end up knackered before the end. Runner's World gear and race editor Kerry McCarthy has learned this lesson the hard way and is now in the studio to share his hard-won wisdom with you. Kerry, welcome back to the podcast.
Good afternoon.
So come on, what should we runners consider when planning our year?
I always think that when you're planning what you want to get out of your running year, it's kind of a little bit like if you're running your own business, to be honest. You know, obviously in business, you're looking for a profit margin. The difference is with your running, you're looking for a PB, and you've got to think about what all the things that you need to do and not do to achieve that goal. And I recently read something by Warren Buffett, you know, the sage of Omaha, like one of the world's richest men.
Yeah.
And he was giving advice on, you know, how to run a company. And he said, make a list of all the things that you, on your to-do list that you think you should do, that we all do every day.
Yeah.
Think of everything you possibly can, then draw a line underneath the top four and ditch everything else on the list. Even though you think it's important, he was like,
right,
don't bother with those. The top four things that you put down are the things that are really important to you. And I think it's the same when you're planning your year. What actually do you want to get out of it? Is it 5K PB? Mm. Is it running your first half marathon?
Yeah.
And then think towards it and towards that, and don't get distracted by kind of all these other, you know, mates going, come and do this, or don't bother with that. Just stick to your guns.
I also think that there's that thing that, I think if someone trains for a marathon, then there's kind of like this notion that at the same time they might be able to squeeze in doing a 5K PB, or there's like, because you're going to get fit.
Mm.
And you will get fit, for sure, if you're doing it. But I think that that kind of becomes a bit of a battle of, like, as you say, battle of targets. Like,
It is possible to, you know, if you're one of these people who's like, I run different distances and I want to sort of max out on all of them this year.
Mm.
It is possible to do that, but you have to, you know, get involved in periodization and all sorts of complicated sounding techniques for running, which basically just means building a base first, getting your endurance up, and then adding the kind of the speed on top later. And it does mean planning it so that you will do the right race at the right time for where you are, rather than, as you say, Ben, just kind of like, oh, I'll just whack in a 10K as part of my marathon training and see if I can run 45 seconds a mile faster than I've done for 2 years.
Yeah. So as a sage, you know, the man with all the knowledge, can you recall a time in your running life when the planning has gone wrong?
So in 2012, I spent a year with a bunch of friends raising money for a charity, and we called our endeavours the 12 and 12 because we were each going to do one physical challenge a month for the year of 2012.
Yeah.
And you could choose anything you wanted, and we had, you know, people on the team doing like bog snorkeling triathlons, or some of them who wanted to get involved but weren't very sporty would then do like cake baking stuff or whatever. But me working at one as well, I was like, well, obviously a large part of it has to be running.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up doing 17 marathons in that year. And the mistake that I made
was doing 17 marathons.
I was getting involved with the bloody thing in the first place. No, it was awesome. But I didn't plan it correctly, and I started off January, but I think I did the Disneyland marathon, which was awesome. But the big error was saving the big kind of effort till the end. And in December, myself and three members of the crew decided that we were going to finish off this charity thing with 12 marathons on 12 consecutive days. And I know we've had lots of people on the podcast. We've got Susie Chan on this one. Here we go. Yeah. And, but to the likes of us mortals, that was quite a big deal.
100%, yeah.
And we, you know, we kind of got a support crew together and vans and, you know, following us. We had to plan. We went from Harrogate outside the Cenotaph in Harrogate Town Centre and finished outside Buckingham Palace. And we had to plan our routes. And every day we had laminated maps and we would each run at our own pace. But I think by the time I got to December, we were all pretty much on our last legs anyway, and people were just kind of, you know, they'd had like stress fractures and God knows what else. And then in hindsight, I would have put the big one in the middle of the year and then maybe tapered a bit towards the end.
Were there repercussions? Were you injured? Did this cause you great or was you just very, very tired by the end of all this?
Just very, very tired. It was quite interesting, actually, because during those 12 marathons, started off, thought, right, I'll do about 5 hours every day. So the first marathon was 4:55.
Mm.
Then I got slower and slower and slower. And day five was the worst. I was running through, I think, Leicester City Centre, and it was bucketing down. And I was running down this high street.
Mm.
And I had to go into a subway and buy myself a cup of tea and compose myself. It took me 7 hours 45 to do that marathon.
Wow.
But then the next day I went 2 hours quicker and I started getting faster and faster and faster because your body just goes, all right, okay, we're doing this, right?
Yeah.
So it was actually okay during the end, but then once the challenge was finished, I just completely crashed.
Yeah.
Like, fortunately, it was Christmas, so people were just kind of like bringing me turkey sandwiches on the sofa. But January and February, I just did like nothing.
Yeah, fair enough. Do you think what are some of the considerations people should take into account when sort of choosing races during a year?
I think it depends on who you are. I think budget is definitely a concern.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, races are getting more and more expensive. And I think you should in your head do a cost benefit analysis of this is a sexy sounding race, or it's unusual, or it's something I've not done before, but is it close enough to what I want to do, and can I afford it? There's no point bankrupting yourself for something that's going to be ultimately disappointing. I think you should, this sounds like it's a slight contradiction to that, but it's not really. I think you should also try and kind of introduce a bit of fear into your plans. Don't, at the same time, don't stick to what you know. If you run on the road, try something on trail. Is it in a cool location? Which of your friends are going to be around to do this with you? You know, a large part of running is kind of making memories, and you know, is it going to be something that sticks long in the memory? But most of all, always be thinking, why am I doing this? That can save you from a lot of pain. Just that one question. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of like it's a general sense check. I mean, obviously, it's pretty self-evident that if you overdo it physically, you're physically going to get injured. But I think people downplay the extent to which they can mentally get affected by it. And that might not be some kind of like big, you know, dramatic mental collapse, although it can certainly lead to that. If you overdo it physically, you know, you can mess up your adrenals and there's a whole world of pain there. But, you know, you don't want to lose your mojo. This is something that we do for fun, that we love. Yeah. Assume that anyone listening to this really loves running because they listen to a running podcast. And so the last thing you want is to get up and go, oh my God, another run, another event. I just can't be bothered. You want to get up and go, I'm so excited because I get to do this.
Do you think, Kerry, and you're someone who's done kind of swimming events recently, and I know Ben obviously has done triathlons.
Mm.
What do you think about putting some non-running specific events in your calendar just for variety?
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah.
The only reason not to do that, again, is if, you know, through fear, I guess. Mm. I mean, so yeah, last year I did my first 5K open water swim. I was a terrible swimmer. I still am a terrible swimmer. But the sense of pride I got through, you know, sort of kind of thrashing around in the water to the end of the 5K and then going, I've just swum across the sea.
Yeah, let's make a point of this. This was not just any old open water 5K. This was between Caribbean islands.
Yeah, okay, you didn't have to mention that.
I think I did.
The sacrifices you've made. No, but it's a long old poke, that career, isn't it? 5K,
but I mean,
sea swimming,
but I'm talking sea swim. It's not. Yeah. I'm not talking about five water. This is my point being, open water.
Yeah, you know, it was kind of, it was the Caribbean and it was delightfully warm and all that. But, you know, there are points where you're getting buffeted by waves and you're getting a load of seaweed in the face and all that kind of stuff. And, yeah. To be honest, it had been a long time since I'd felt that nervous. You know, working where we do, we get used to doing races all the time. I'm never nervous about a running race, no matter what, is because I know I've got the experience. But when I stood on the beach ready to do that swim, it was actually quite, kind of masochistically, it was quite a nice feeling. Mm-hmm. And similarly, when I then used that swimming later on in the summer to go and do my first triathlon, I was out of my comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And it kind of completely regenerated me, re-energised me for what was to come, because I wasn't like, oh, same old.
Yeah. Have you got anything planned in for 2019, Kerry? Are you putting together a wish list?
Yeah, actually, this is, talking about this now is good timing, because I only just sort of finished putting together the plan in the previous few days. So I've got Tokyo Marathon in about 6 weeks' time.
Great.
Is this you getting your majors?
Yes. So, RW editor Andy Dixon and I will be going out there, and it'll be our final of the 6 marathon majors.
Yeah.
So that'll be good.
Yeah.
And then I'm doing the Edinburgh Marathon, which I've done before, but I'll be doing that again at the end of May, and that's one at which I want to try and get a time.
Yeah.
In June, I am doing a trail race in the Tyrol region of the Austrian Alps called the Meierhofen Ultra K. Ooh, I'm doing the kind of, it's, you know, a couple of thousand metres above sea level. Gosh. And yeah, but I'm doing the baby one. You can do, I think it's like 14K, 30K or 50K, and I'm doing the 14K. Yeah. But I'm using that as a basis to then do another trail race in Sweden called Lidingöloppet.
Of course.
Which I had to write down in front of me.
I genuinely believe I've built that. It's the cupboard in my bedroom.
Yeah. That's 30K up in the Swedish mountains somewhere. And then possibly that my final thing, having tried to build my stamina and fitness and core strength all year, is possibly to do my first half Ironman in Marrakesh in October.
Yeah.
Marrakesh as well.
But that is a great variety of stuff, Kerry, isn't it?
Yeah.
That is a great variety of stuff. Lots of different challenges, different locations.
And I'm scared about a couple of them, which is kind of how I knew I should really kind of do it. Yeah.
Well, that's it. I think similarly with this Escape Britain.
Escape from Great Britain.
Escape from Great Britain. Yeah, we're still in Great Britain.
That's true. But it has that fear factor, doesn't it? It has
100%.
That kind of
unknown. Terrifies me.
That's great. Well, Kerry, thanks very much for coming on the podcast.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, let's get you on again soon. But I think that's really interesting advice, and hopefully our listeners will get you know, I think we better should, idea about how to plan a year.
I think we should get race updates. So now we know what you're doing, you should come in and tell us how each one goes. The fear factor, we need to find how terrifying each one was.
Can we just agree that if you don't hear any more about a particular race that I've mentioned, it was just a complete disaster?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Okay. Like, the unwritten rule is that you just don't hear about it. It means it's not happened or it's gone badly.
But if I have to be, like, wrestled out of the recording studio still whittering on, it means I nailed it.
Fine, good. PB. Yeah. Cool. Thanks again, Kerry. Cheers, mate.
Cheers.
For more from Runner's World, head to runnersworld.co.uk.
Yeah, just one second.
Sorry, it's just getting some water.
La la la, do you sing it again?
La 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 la.
La 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 la. It sounds a bit like Carpenters, doesn't it?
La 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 la. La 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 la. La 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 la. So that brings us to the end of this month's Runner's World podcast. I want to say a big thank you to our guests, Susie Chan, Tom Craggs and Kerry McCarthy, and to Scrumble Studios in Soho, where this was recorded.
For more from Runner's World, why not visit our website, runnersworld.co.uk, where you'll find more news, reviews and interviews from across the running world.
If you like what you've heard, please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and give us a rating. Thank you very much for listening, and we will see you next month.
The Runner's World podcast was recorded at Scramble Studios, Soho.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.